The Reverend Amanda Henderson is the longtime leader of the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado. An effective organizer, Amanda has now published an immensely helpful book to encourage and guide others in the ways of cooperation and unity. The title is Holy Chaos, Creating Connections in Divisive Times. And I am very pleased that it brings the author back to State of Belief Radio. Amanda, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you. Glad to be with you again.
With all that you're doing, I don't know how you found the time to write such a compelling book, but there's a lot of your work of lessons learned and inspiration found in these pages, right?
Yes. Yeah. A lot of experiences, and it was a real gift personally to be able to take the time to step back and weave the threads through the experiences and the growth and the work of these past years, and to think forward of how this, the lessons that I've learned and the mistakes that I've made can serve others as we try and continue to step into these messy spaces.
Yeah. For whom did you write this book?
I wrote this book for those who are sitting and watching the world as it is and feeling a sense of discontent and longing to be able to do something about it. And so I wrote it for those who are needing the encouragement to be able to reach back into their own stories and wonder, why do I believe what I believe? And how does that guide me in stepping into difficult and complex spaces to be able to work for social change? And so I wrote it for those who are kind of sitting on the sidelines and wondering, how do I step into these messy, chaotic spaces most effectively and with a sense of openness and grace?
I love the title, Holy Chaos. Tell me what comes to your mind when you hear those words.
This has been kind of one of my mantras in life for a long time, and I love children and animals and growing things and being in the thick of life. I'm one of those people that I like having a lot going on, obviously, and it's in the middle of that that I find moments where there's just this breath or this sense of deep connection. And for me, that is the holy. And I recall you are on holy ground in the midst of the most difficult and complicated and chaotic spaces of life. So that's what it's all about to me. And so this phrase, holy chaos, is really important. And I want to name, I had a moment where, even though this is a phrase that I've loved for a long time, we have talked about this political climate a lot as one of chaos. And so I hesitated a bit because I want to talk about the chaos of the goodness of life and the complexity rather than intended chaos that can divide us. So I think even the word chaos itself is complicated. There can be chaos that is beneficial and chaos that is harmful.
I'm glad that you said that you're dealing with the Holy One. And let me tell you, the other chaos that we're dealing with is not holy.
It is not. And I think that's one of the complicated things. And I think I get into that in the book of how can we tell when something is a holy way of chaos, and how can we tell when it is a destructive way of chaos? And I think that's discernment and wisdom. And it takes being in the spaces to be able to tell and feel what kind of chaos is holy and moving us toward life and connection, and what kind of chaos is simply working to disrupt and divide, and how do we lean into that kind of chaos that's moving us toward connection, rather than the opposite response, which I think can be to retreat or to be paralyzed or to freeze, because chaos is disorienting.
Amanda, what are the specific areas of contention and disagreement that you address in this book?
I pretty much get into all the hot topics. So in this book, I start off talking about the election of Donald Trump and how difficult that has been. I come from a family that is mostly Republican and supports Donald Trump. And so how do we deal with that division around, I think that it's been such an incredibly divisive time, of course, around Donald Trump. Also, I get into topics of race and gender and abortion and LGBTQ rights and equality and homelessness and poverty and economic inequality. So if it's a hot topic that people have pretty intense feelings about, I kind of go there in this book.
Yeah. You write powerfully about racism in your book with the title of the chapter, I Can't Breathe, evoking Eric Garner's death in New York City, but also connecting in a chilling way the killing of George Floyd. The book is about coming together. So how can we come together around this issue?
Yeah. Thank you for that. And there are two sections where I really dig into learning for myself about racism. Actually, I think there's a few different stories where that's a theme, because quite honestly, I think, of course, this is at the heart of who we are as Americans, that we have not reckoned with our history of racism and slavery and genocide. And so that one of the first things we need to do is to learn and to listen and to really understand how racism has so shaped every aspect of our life. And so the I Can't Breathe story is my first experience of leaning into these spaces. And that was in 2014. And I think as especially someone my age, as a white progressive person who grew up in the 80s and 90s, when we thought that we had made progress in coming to terms with racism and, you know, the election of Barack Obama, 2014 was a really a reminder of, no, we haven't. And people of color have known this for a long time, that racism had not disappeared. It had evolved and really taken different shapes and forms. So that story is my own learning and stepping into those spaces with listening and with noticing the ways that fear is really holds us back from addressing the racism that is so in the air we breathe, and that we have to learn how to move through that fear and understand where it comes from and move into those spaces. The other stories talk about my own messing up. And when we move into spaces of addressing racial inequality and white supremacy, we will make mistakes. And so we have to have a level of courage and humility to step in and with deep openness and willingness to engage in difficult conversations and build real relationships. And those have been my greatest gifts, is my relationships with friends who have taught me and called me out when something felt hurtful, or I didn't realize that I was doing something or saying something, and then to listen and then to actually make that change and lean in again and not retreat back to a place of fear.
Yeah. An undeniable challenge is the number of white people who simply disbelieve what the Black experience is like in this country. How can we start engaging folks across this kind of denial?
It takes time, and sometimes it takes seeing with your own eyes. And so being in relationships and deep, genuine relationships is really important. I also think that sometimes media can be really helpful. I know a lot of people are watching 13 on Netflix that came out in 2016. So finding these kind of movies or stories and podcasts, the 1619 podcast through the New York Times. So going out of our way to really learn and read is one quick way without creating more work for our communities of color and friends of color to be able to teach white folks about racism, doing that education yourself, doing that self-reflection. The other piece that I think is really helpful for white folks is to understand white supremacy culture, and that this is a culture that has created this sense that we have to achieve and we have to be busy and we have to be better. And it actually is harming white folks as much as police killings and criminalization in different ways, obviously, in different material ways, but starting to realize that I am not free until you are free, and you are not free until I am free, and that our liberation is actually connected to one another. So it's moving us out of a space of pity, which is one of the places that makes me the most frustrated when we talk about racial equity work, and moving to a place of mutual liberation. And that when we realize that we are tied up in the same garment, that it becomes that much more urgent to address it.
I don't want to use any names here, but last week I spoke with a prominent civil rights leader who is an ordained faith leader. This person had called up one of the most public white evangelical figures, someone who's on TV all the time, and asked that leader to speak out on police violence against black people. And the evangelical leader said, basically, not our issue. Now, how on earth can we break through that? Or is part of the message of this book, as the old saying goes, when the people lead, the leaders will follow?
I love that. When the people lead, the leaders will follow. And I think that we're seeing a lot of that, quite honestly, in some evangelical, and, you know, the folks who are probably that person is leading are starting to challenge that's not their issue. And I'm a parent to an 18-year-old, and seeing the younger generation and the ways that they are starting to understand racism and their own experience of racial inequality and the ways that their own lives have been shaped by racist structures. I think that's where my hope lies, is that there are some folks who are not going to really come around to understanding this is their issue. Some will. So I'm not saying that, you know, give up all hope on those who are in that camp. I'm saying I don't really want to focus too much energy on trying to change that person. I would rather focus my energy on the generation of folks who are going to make that view irrelevant, mm-hmm. because there's no longer people following it.
Amanda, writing a book like this requires stepping back and taking a big picture look at the work that you've done for so many years. I'm curious if working on Holy Chaos gave you a new perspective on your own activism in ministry.
Oh, great question. It really did. And I love this metaphor of the dance floor and the balcony, and that there are times in life when we are deeply on the dance floor. We're feeling the music and the rhythm, and we're moving, and we're in it. And then there are times when we step up to the balcony and we watch below and we see the movement happening, and we can get a kind of different view. And so writing this book was an opportunity to step up to the balcony and reflect back. And for me, it helped understand in leadership, there are times when we are doing emergent strategy, and there are times when we're doing deliberate strategy. And emergent strategy happens in the moment. And we've been in one of those kind of times right now with COVID-19 and now currently the past 14 days of protest and some real movement around policy, around racial equity. We're in it. And then there are times when we can have some deliberate strategy and thinking and looking at the big picture arc of social change. And so it has been a real gift to be able to take that step back, and helps in leadership for me and our team at the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, who we have this great team of 8 folks who are in the work, and to be able to help provide that perspective when sometimes you can't see the balcony view when you are on the dance floor. So it helps to be able to have had that perspective as I work to support our team who's on the ground working.
Amanda, please tell our listeners about the resources that are available for groups that want to read this book and work on the skills that you teach in it together.
Yeah, so they can find the book, Holy Chaos, at Chalice Press. So the book was published with Chalice Press through their website. You can also find it on Amazon and anywhere that books are sold. And in the book, at the end of each chapter, there are questions for reflection. And so my thoughts around it is that this is a workbook. I tell a lot of personal stories, deeply personal stories with my family and mothering and friendships and life, but also my real hope is that it evokes a sense of for people to be able to reflect on their own stories and then learnings from different religious traditions and to develop a real set of skills to be able to step into these spaces. So I am happy to do Zoom calls or Skype calls with folks or groups who are doing study. Especially in this time, a lot of people are doing online study groups. So people reach out to me they can reach out through the website, holychaos.org, and find me and we'll set up a time.
What would you want each reader of this book to take away with them after reading it, Holy Chaos?
I think I'd want 2 things. One, for people to think about what they believe and why. And then 2, to step into a new space. And in the time of social distancing, that might be more difficult than before, although we're in kind of this in-between space, but to reach out into a space that makes them a little uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And so those are the 2 things. 1, to reflect on what they believe and why, and 2, to step into a new space that makes them uncomfortable.
The Reverend Amanda Henderson is Executive Director of the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, an inspiring leader, effective organizer, and articulate writer. She has just published Holy Chaos, Creating Connections in Divisive Times. Amanda, congratulations on such a good book, and thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you. It was a gift to be with you again.